Welcome to In His Footsteps with award-winning author Margaret Agard, sharing practical tips for living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Now here's Margaret.
Today I'll be sharing the secret of success. The secret of success at work, in your relationships, when you're facing a problem, and more. And to help me share that secret, I'll be talking with young children.
Now here's this week's Bible question and answer, brought to you by the Amazing Bible Timeline. Quickly see 6,000 years of Bible and world history together on one color-coded wall poster. Find out more about the Amazing Bible Timeline or ask your own Bible question at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
The Bible question this week is, are there triplets in the Bible? Why would you even ask that? Wouldn't you think the Bible would make it clear if there were triplets born? The Bible proclaims loudly that twins were born, Jacob and Esau, but nothing is said about triplets in the verses in question. So the two verses that are in question have to do with Noah, who lived 500 years, and then the Bible says begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And then later, the Bible says that Terah, the father of Abraham, lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So the question arises, were they all born at the same time? No. Based on other dates, births of other children, looking forward in the Bible, we can see that they had to have been born at different times. So why were they all named together? Because they are important in the Bible lineage. Everyone on earth is descended from one of Noah's three sons. In the case of Abraham and his brothers, each of his brothers contributed through their descendants, wives, to Abraham's family. And therefore, they are important in the descendancy and the lineage of Christ. So, no, there are not triplets in the Bible. Today, we're going to be talking about the secret to success. The secret to success is clear in the Bible. To find yourself, you lose yourself in the service of others. Have you ever noticed that the most successful people in business, in relationships, are the most generous, giving, happy people? You wonder how they manage to get it all done and still take care of themselves, but they do. Christ tells us that unless we become as little children, we cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And I'll tell you, after talking to these amazing children and hearing from them today, you're going to understand what Christ meant. They have really taught me how to serve. Jamie, my show is called In His Footsteps, and it's aimed at sharing with people how others are out sharing their time and their talents to make the world a better and happier place. And one of the things I want to discuss with you is even a child can do it. That's how I know you're not a child.
Yeah, I did start when I was 8, so I technically was a child when I started. So
yes, right. And that's the question I had, because a lot of people have ideas. And even children have ideas, but they're not quite sure how to start. And then a lot of them will do one thing, but somehow you've turned it into an ongoing endeavor. So first, why don't you just start with what was your idea and how you got started?
All right. When I was 8 years old, I went to a school called McKissick Elementary. And they started a program, Adopt a Soldier, where they adopted 7 soldiers to send packages to. And that's where the first candy bag went. And that's what I call each little package that I make. The first 7 got a handy bag each. The idea for the handy bag came from the Halloween bags my mom used to make. She used to fill hands with candies and snakes and stuff for Halloween.
And when you say hands, are you talking about those little plastic...
Yeah, plastic food service gloves.
Yes, okay. All right, go ahead.
Right, and... But yeah, that's where I got the idea for the shape. So the first 7 got those handy bags, and I decided I didn't want the other soldiers to feel left out, so I started Hands for Soldiers. And Mom told me that well, you're not going to be able to do it just on your allowance, because that's how it first started. So
right.
I went to talk to my mayor, the mayor of Easley, and he decided to help us out.
Now, how big is Easley?
How big is Easley?
How many people? Do you know?
Sorry, Mom laughed when I said that. How big is Easley? That's a good question. It's smaller than Greenville, but bigger than Pickens.
Okay. And how did you get the appointment? Whose idea was it to talk to the mayor? Was that your idea or your mom suggested?
Yeah, that was my idea. Okay. Mom thought I would ask to see Grandma, but she's like, you need to find somebody to give help. And I was like, can I talk to the mayor?
That's great. And so you got an appointment with the mayor, and of course he gave you an appointment because who wouldn't give an appointment to an 8-year-old? But go ahead.
Right. And well, I talked to the mayor, and he was telling me about his time as a soldier. And he always was craving Juicy Fruit chewing gum because he couldn't get it there. So that was added to the list. And he gave a donation, and I was able to continue making care packages.
Then what happened? Because the next thing I read, you started doing booths at places?
We started attending festivals and setting up a booth. Had just a simple stand with a display, brochures, a money box, and started telling people about our project. And they would give donations, and then we started, we had to put cards on each of the hands, right? And a company was going to make the cards for me, like, saying, oh, we can copy your handwriting and, like, print it on all of them. And I was like, but it wouldn't be a special. So we started having the kids draw the cards. So there'd be each card would be unique and special, and they would know that the kids appreciate them. And then I would sign it with a message that says, thank you for your service. You deserve a big hand. Love, Janie.
And how many have you signed?
How many have I signed?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. How many, Mom? 22,875.
I'm surprised you don't have arthritis already. What do? Sign that while you're watching TV, or you just...
I play the computer and write cards. We were driving the car on a long distance. I write cards. I watch TV. I write cards.
This is a big part of your life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Year-round? Pretty much year-round?
Pretty much year-round. We go by amount of donations. Like, if we have enough money to send boxes, we'll send up a big stack of boxes. Like, we took, the largest amount of boxes taken to the post office at one time was 12. And, like,
you stress that it isn't just for soldiers.
Yeah, it's for any body in the branches of military, Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, Coast Guard, anyone that's serving for our country.
Okay. And do you ever hear back from them?
Yes, I have, is it 7 scrapbooks now, or is it 7 scrapbooks full of letters, photos, everything from the soldiers that we've received?
If someone is listening today and they said, oh, I'd like to start a project, I've had an idea for a project, what would you say?
Go for it. Just figure out what you want to do, how you're going to do it, and who you're going to get to help. Just don't think that you're too young, you're too old, you're too tired, you don't want to do something like this. But if you really, really want to do something like this, just go for it.
That was Janie Turner with her Hands for Soldiers project, which is actually all hands for all the military. She's provided over 22,000 personally signed cards and hands filled with treats for our military. She makes it sound so easy. Just do it. Now we're going to talk with Teresa McCourt about a project that her Brownie troop came up with for creating kindness in the Sutton area. You are one of the co-leaders of Girl Scout Troop 2387 in Sutton, West Virginia?
That's correct.
Okay, and I saw these signs driving into Sutton that was talking about, looked like old Burma Shave signs, except exhorting us to be kind, telling us our words mattered.
Yes.
Okay, how did that come about?
Well, part of the mantra of Girl Scouts is helping girls to make their world a better place, you know, helping them discover ways that they can do that and be a part of that. And so at the beginning of the school year, I work primarily with the Brownie age level, which are second and third graders, about 7 or 8 years old. I was having a conversation with the girls and asked them how they thought the world could be a better place. And one of the girls said, if we would talk to each other better, the world would become better. And that's really the place it came from, the very beginning, was just talking about how they can make the world better. And then it went from that to, well, how can we do that? And the girls came up with the idea of going into Sutton and using chalk on the sidewalks and window paint on the storefronts, and, of course, the signs that you saw going into Sutton, writing kind words, compassionate words, loving words, words that the girls thought if adults and the public in general would start using these words instead of some of the ugly words that they use, that their world would actually become a better place. And that's really where it came from. It was the girls, completely driven by the girls.
Oh, this is, you know what, I'm going to go get some pictures. I actually got pictures of the signs, but I didn't realize they'd done it on the storefronts and the sidewalks.
Yeah, well, it already had been cleaned off. I cleaned it off around the first part of December. Those signs have actually been up for a little while now.
How do the girls feel about the result of the project? Do they feel like it made a difference, or they just had a good time and now they aren't talking about it anymore, or what?
No, I mean, we've moved on to some other things. Their focus is still on what they did, and I think they really had a good time doing it. And I think that they realized just through conversations that it really starts with a lot of folks talking. And if it did nothing else, it at least brought it to adult attention at the kids' level. They could even see that the way we were talking to each other wasn't the best way. And so it, if nothing else, started those conversations at the adult level and got us thinking about it and got conversations going. And I think the girls were really proud of that impact that they made. And I think, you know, they're realistic. They know that they're not going to change everything with some signs in downtown Sutton, but they know that they did their part. And that's the important piece, is empowering them and letting them know that, you know, you have an opportunity to be a part of it. So that's what they did.
And that's a perfect example of Girl Scouts in action, because it really is about creating leadership in the girls and having them take charge of the projects and come up with the projects on their own,
right.
Which
yes.
was perfect.
Yes.
Perfect example of that. I do, and that's one thing I used to say to my children is, as we watch these TV shows, they say the horriblest things to each other and then have a laugh track behind it. And the person that they said the horrible thing to laughs too, like it's funny, and it's not.
Right.
A lot going on in society where people are thinking it's okay to say these things, and they're really not. So I love what they did. We're talking today about how young people, children, lead the way in showing us how we can serve others. We talked with Janie Turner, who started her project when she was 8. It's still going strong while she's in high school. Just heard from a Brownie troop, 7 and 8-year-olds in Sutton, West Virginia. And now hear from John Perino, who, with a group of friends, started a project when they were in 5th and 6th grade. John's going to tell us now what they did and how they got started.
All right. Well, my name is John Perino, and I'm from Rhode Island. And what I did is I created Project TGIF, Turn Grief into Fuel. And this is basically an initiative led by students who are in the 8th grade to heat the homes of needy family using recycled waste cooking oil. And we started this project in 2008.
Wait. Let me ask this question. Do they actually use the cooking oil to heat the home, or you get the money from the cooking oil and use that to heat the home?
Basically, once the cooking oil is collected from the restaurant, we have it brought to a facility where it's converted into biodiesel. And basically, that company sells the biodiesel, and that money they use to buy biodiesel credits for the charities. And basically, we just donate the money, and they use that to buy biodiesel for the family's homes.
Okay, and how long have you been doing this?
The project started in 2008, so 3 years about, yeah.
And you were?
Well, 4.
And how old were you when you started it?
I was in 5th grade, so I was 10.
That's what surprises me, John. How does a 10-year-old do that? What was the first thing you did? What was the first thing you thought, and how did you get started?
Well, I actually got started when I read an article in a local newspaper, and it was about the Warm Shelter, which is a local charity, and they were running a campaign to raise money for heating assistance. And at the time, like, I didn't really know a lot about the economic situation, unemployment, and things like that, so I did a little bit of research on what the charities were doing and the need for heating assistance, and I came across using biofuel for heating assistance.
So you found another project that was similar and decided to start one like that in your area?
Well, our project is fairly unique, but the program the charity was running, they were just collecting monetary donations from the public.
Okay. And then,
so this project is like one of a kind.
So how did you come up with the idea to go get the used heating fuel and turn it in, or the used cooking oil? We actually have, I hate to tell you this, because we have a diesel car, and so we have two 55-gallon drums of cooking oil sitting in our backyard that has been sitting there for a year while my husband decides how he's going to turn that into recycled biodiesel. But, yeah. Anyway, we might be better off doing what you're doing. So go ahead. Tell me how you figured out the part about collecting the cooking oil and turning that into money.
A friend of mine who's also on the project, she went to actually an expo at the University of Rhode Island. And basically, she found a local company that was collecting waste cooking oil and converting it into biofuel, and they were selling that for profit. And we decided that we could kind of incorporate the idea of recycling cooking oil and heating homes into one project.
And then how did you approach the restaurants? It's interesting. There's all this news, maybe in an underground way, about people who are using biodiesel. And you would think that by now restaurants would be charging for their waste oil, but they actually still seem to be pretty grateful that someone's willing to come and take it away. So how does that work?
Well, yeah, the restaurants, some of them do get paid. Some of them pay to have their oil taken away. But what we did, we actually have a friend who works at a popular, or actually owns a popular restaurant here in town. And so he was the first restaurant that we signed up because we were like, at the time, we were fifth graders, and it's kind of hard to sign up restaurants that you don't know when you have a group of kids coming in saying, we want your waste cooking oil. You know, it's not necessarily normal. So we basically had this friend who was the first to donate his oil, and he gave us contacts for other restaurants, and from there, it just kind of snowballed and grew.
But John, that really is the way you do anything. You start with who you know, and then they introduce you to other people. That is good procedure in any age of your life. Now, I'm assuming that none of you drive.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so how do you get the cooking oil from the restaurant to the recycle place?
Actually, the same company that does the recycling also does the collecting. So they come around with their big 1,000-gallon tank and collect the oil with their truck.
So you're the middleman, in a sense. You go out and you get the restaurant signed up for it, then you let the recycle company know, and they go collect it, turn it into biodiesel, and they credit you with a certain amount of profit? Is that what happens?
Precisely. Yeah, we are pretty much the brains of the operation. We kind of work on all the finances and organize the whole thing, but we do have companies that do the collecting, the converting, and the distributing. But we actually have an agreement with the refiner, and from the profits that they get, we keep 20%. And that 20% is the portions that go to charity.
Okay. And is there, and none of the restaurants at this point are asking to be paid. Is that it? You're getting all donated?
Yeah. We don't charge the restaurants anything to donate their waste cooking oil.
Okay.
But yeah, unfortunately, we are losing some business because people, you know, the times can be hard and people do need the money from selling their waste cooking oil.
Oh, and so some of them can make money, but others, you can't write that off as a tax. Of course, if you're not making much money, you don't need much tax credit, but still, it's a nice thing to do. Well, so John, how many people have you been able to help?
We've actually donated about $54,000 worth of bioheat, which equates to about 14,400 gallons. And this has actually been used to heat the homes of 144 families.
This is so wonderful, John. And what have you learned from doing it?
Really what I've learned is that it may not seem like it, but it doesn't take a lot to help a lot. Meaning we were just a group of fifth graders who had this idea, who had the time, who wanted to help. And 3 years later, we've helped heat the homes of 144 families. And it proves that just a little bit, we set aside a few hours every week, and it goes a huge way.
Thanks, John. Is there something you want to say to, we'll call it, the youth of Somersville, West Virginia, about anything you haven't said yet that you want to say?
What I would say is to get started. It's really easy to set up a system of this collecting, converting, and distributing. All you have to do is just contact the charities, contact the refiners, and from there, it's just signing up restaurants, and, you know, it really falls into place really nicely, and it's quite a wonderful project.
Thanks, John. They make it sound so easy, don't they? Janie Turner said, well, just get started. And John says the same thing, just get started. No wonder Christ tells us that we need to become like little children. Have to wonder why we're not, as adults, just getting started. What did we learn today? If little children can serve, we all can serve. Service is the secret to success. Little children do not have money. They do not have skills. They do not have transportation. These children just had a desire, and they showed us something else. The way to truly serve is to reach out and involve other people who might have those skills, that time, that transportation. They became the idea generators. And as they said, it only takes a few hours a week to make a huge difference in your own community. Can I close the program today with a song called His Hands, coming full circle. And the music and lyrics are by Kenneth Copeland, and it's from the album Greater Than Us All, His Hands.
From the days on his mother's knee, like no other before, he was all that a boy should be. Then the boy became the man. Giving endlessly.
is filled with selflessness, and I'll not rest till I make up my hands what they could be, till these hands become like those from moments away. Other hands betray him out of greed, shameful greed. And then his hands are trembling, straining to carry the beam that they'd be nailed to. As he stumbles through the streets, heading for the hill on which he'd die, he would die. They take his hands, his mighty hands, those gentle hands, and then to me, and though I'm not yet as I would be, he has shown me how I could be. I will make my hands like those from
That was His Hands from the album Greater Than Us All, music and lyrics by Kenneth Copeland. Next week, we'll be talking with Myra Dolan. Join us next week as Myra shares how she was able to bless others with a talent she didn't even have.
You can find out more about how to have the joy that comes from living each day for God while still keeping up with daily life in the book In His Footsteps, How to Be Happy in Every Situation, available at the website inhisfootsteps.com or online at amazon.com.
You can get more information on our guests and our discussion today, including replays of this show, at inhisfootsteps.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duck, West Virginia 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews with people who do.